Well, we're continuing our study of the book of Ruth. Ruth is a fairly short book, just four chapters in length. We've spent a while working our way through the first chapter of Ruth, and now we're going to be picking up the pace a little bit as the next sections are really units of thought in and of themselves, and so we're going to be looking at chapter 2 in its entirety today. So Ruth chapter 2, if you'd like to turn to that in the Pew Bible, that is on page 222. 222. So at this point in the book of Ruth, Naomi has come back from the land of Moab, come back to the town of Bethlehem, and she has been accompanied by her widowed daughter-in-law, Ruth. And the story picks up here in Bethlehem in chapter 2. Hear the word of the Lord. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain, after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, and said, "The man's name with whom I worked today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Thus far, the reading of God's holy and inspired word, and all God's people said, Amen. Well, as we noted in last week's sermon, the last verse of chapter 1 said that Ruth and Naomi came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. Now, harvest season was a time when God's people gave thanks to him for his rich provision. It was a time of celebration. It was a time also of remembering the poor, sharing your abundance with those who had need. And during this particular harvest season, the one that's described in our text, the fact that there was a crop to harvest gave special cause for celebration. For we know from chapter 1 of Ruth that just prior to this, the land had been struck by famine. So this was a special, an especially joyous harvest season. Now, we know that that famine was the thing that led Elimelech and Naomi to take their boys and leave Bethlehem and seek refuge in Moab. And we also know that Moab proved not to be any refuge for Naomi. Instead, it was a place of devastating loss, as she lost her husband and she lost both of her sons. Naomi put it this way at the end of chapter 1, "Though she went away from Bethlehem full, the Lord brought her back empty." And that's why it was so significant that the barley harvest was taking place when Naomi and Ruth returned to Bethlehem. The harvest testified that God had brought his people out of the emptiness of their famine, and he was bringing them into the fullness of a new harvest season. And here in Ruth chapter 2, we begin to see the Lord doing the very same thing for Naomi and Ruth, bringing them out of their emptiness and bringing them into a new era of fullness in their lives. Really, this passage gives us a beautiful picture of how the Lord cares for those who take refuge in him. And it also shows us how God blesses his people in a manner that goes far beyond anything that we could ask or imagine. So the chapter begins by introducing a new character in the story. In verse 1, we're introduced to him briefly here, Naomi's relative named Boaz. And the writer describes Boaz as a worthy man. And that phrase indicates that he is a man of noble character. And he certainly shows himself to be such throughout the remainder of this book. Boaz is going to be the instrument through which the Lord extends his kindness and care to both Naomi and Ruth. Boaz is the human redeemer through whom the Lord, who is the supreme redeemer, is going to redeem these two women and turn things around for them. Now, it is significant that it is Ruth, rather than Naomi, who takes the initiative once they arrive in Bethlehem. She's the one who takes the initiative to find a way to make a living for their household, this household of two widows who don't have any children. I think it's significant because, you know, you remember, Naomi did not want Ruth to come back with her to Bethlehem. Now, she tried to convince Ruth to go back to Moab, and she gave her a lot of good reasons for doing so. And when Ruth made it clear that she was going to stick with Naomi no matter what, Naomi didn't even express any gratitude for that. She resigns herself to it, but there's just no indication that she's very happy to have Ruth with her. In fact, when they arrive in Bethlehem finally, Naomi says that she's come back empty. She's empty-handed, even though Ruth is right next to her. And Ruth has really sacrificed a lot in order to continue to be with her. It's as if Ruth didn't count for anything. And one wonders if the reason why Naomi thought so little of Ruth was because maybe Ruth was a reminder of Naomi's bad decisions and of the losses that she'd experienced back in Moab. But whatever the reason, the irony is that it's going to be through Ruth that Naomi is going to be restored to a place of fullness and brought out of her emptiness. Another thing that stands out in the opening part of this chapter is that Naomi's depression seems to have paralyzed her. And we know from the preceding paragraph that she was in a state of despair. And here we really begin to see the effect that this has had on her. You know, she is the native Bethlehemite. And yet it's her Moabite daughter who is a foreigner. She's the one who has to go out and find food for their household. When you think about that, you know, it would have been a lot more likely for people to show compassion to Naomi than to a foreigner. At least Naomi could have accompanied Ruth and been with her and vouched for her. But she doesn't do anything like that. She gives no intention that she intends to do anything. It's like she's paralyzed in her depression. Now, we can understand why Naomi would have been depressed. Her circumstances were depressing. She had faced a great deal of heartbreak, a great deal of hardship, a great deal of loss. And yet she was wrong to conclude that this meant that God was out to get her, that God was against her. On the contrary, the Lord was using her trials to continue to carry out his good purpose for her. And as we reflect upon that, it's good for us to be reminded that God does the same thing in the lives of his people today. God works in the same way in our lives. And you may be familiar with a classic Puritan book by a Puritan minister named Richard Sibbes. The book is called The Bruised Reed. And it's a pretty short book, and it's well worth reading. The book gets its name from the verse in Isaiah, where the prophet says, "A bruised reed he will not break. A bruised reed he will not break." And Sibbes, early on in that book, tells us that Christians need bruising. Why do we need bruising? This is why. We need bruising so that reeds may know themselves to be reeds and not oaks. Even reeds need bruising by reason of the remainder of pride in our nature, and to let us see that we live by mercy. It is no easy matter to bring a man from nature to grace, from grace to glory. So unyielding and intractable are our hearts. So Sibbes is very helpful there in reminding us that the bruising that the Lord brings into our lives is necessary for the continued outworking of our salvation. If God doesn't do that, we'll start thinking that we're oaks. And we're not. We're just reeds. We can take comfort, though, in knowing that though God may bruise us, he will not break us. And we can see that in Naomi's life. She was certainly bruised, but the Lord did not allow her to be broken. Well, when Ruth asks Naomi for permission to go out to the fields to find food, the practice that she's referring to here is gleaning. And this was something that God had commanded in the Mosaic Law. Under the Mosaic Law, this was how the poor in Israel were taken care of. And the system is described in the book of Leviticus, in Leviticus 19, where it says this: "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. So we see there that the people of Israel were commanded to harvest their crops in such a manner that something was left behind. There was some leftovers. There was something for the poor. It was a sort of welfare system, but it was a sweat equity kind of welfare system. It was one where the poor had to do some of the work. And right there, I think there's a helpful principle for us that could be applied to modern day society. Certainly, we do believe that the civil aspect of the Mosaic Law is no longer in force. That passed away with the theocracy. And yet at the same time, there is a lot of general equity in the civil law, and it can be a helpful guide for us today. I think this would be one example of that. Well, as Ruth went out to glean, the author says something interesting. The author says, at least the way the ESV puts it, she happened to come to Boaz's field. She happened to come to Boaz's field. And that's a pretty good translation, but a more literal translation would read like this. Her chance chanced upon the portion of the field belonging to Boaz. Her chance chanced upon this. Now, if you wanted to put it in a more contemporary idiom, we would probably say something like this. As luck would have it, she ended up in Boaz's field. That's really what the author is saying. As luck would have it, she ended up in Boaz's field. Now, of course, the author of Ruth does not believe in luck. What he's doing here is he's employing irony. It might have seemed like a mere coincidence, a matter of mere chance. And yet this is really another sign that the invisible hand of providence is at work and is in control of what's taking place in the lives of these two women. It was not mere chance that brought Ruth to Boaz's field. It was the Lord. And we're given insight into both Boaz's character and Ruth's character by the way they're described here in verses 4 through 7 especially. And first of all, with regard to Boaz, we can see that he was a godly man and he was a good employer. And that's evident right away in the way that he greets his workers. He pronounces God's blessing upon them as he comes upon them doing their work. And then they respond with a blessing of their own to him. So we get a real brief snapshot there of a work environment that's free from many of the things that can make a workplace so miserable and so demeaning. Hard work is certainly being done, but it's being done under the leadership of a good man who really does care about his employees. And then we gain insight into Ruth's character by the way that she is described here in these verses, in a couple of ways. First of all, her loyalty and her kindness is highlighted by the mention of the fact that she came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And remember that was a tremendous act of self-sacrifice on Ruth's part. She's a young woman at this point. You know, she would be eligible for remarriage. And her prospects for remarriage would have been far better in Moab than in Bethlehem. And remember, as a widow in that society, especially if you were a young widow, the thing you wanted more than anything else would be to get remarried. But she gave that up so that she could be with Naomi and help Naomi. And we're also given a glimpse into Ruth's character by how she makes her request to glean in Boaz's field. Now, some of the details here, the Hebrew is a little difficult at points, and it's not entirely clear, but I'm going to give you kind of the interpretation that goes along with the way it's translated here in the ESV. She makes this request in a pretty humble manner. And I think that especially stands out because the law actually required landowners to allow the poor to glean. They had to do it. And so Ruth really could have come up to Boaz's foreman and come up with a sense of entitlement. and demanded her rights. But that's not the picture that we're given here. She asks for permission in a humble and polite manner. And then lastly, the foreman's words to Boaz indicate that Ruth is a hard worker. We see this especially in verse 7. She's been working from early in the morning with only a short break. You'll see in the ESV, verse 7 there has a footnote. The meaning of the Hebrew phrase is uncertain, and that is true. Probably the ESV is the best bet at interpreting that, that the idea is that she's been there working hard from early morning, only taking a short break. Well, that brings us then to the interchange between Boaz and Ruth. And here we see that Boaz already knows something about Ruth's situation. So her sacrificial loyalty to Naomi has not gone unnoticed. And it's interesting that Boaz sees this as more than a matter of familial devotion. It's more than that. Listen to what he says to Ruth. "The Lord repay you for what you've done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." She could have looked for refuge elsewhere. She could have stayed in Moab and looked for refuge in finding a husband there, a Moabite husband. But no, she came to Israel and she took refuge under the wings of the Lord, the God of Israel. And this is an image that we see in a number of places in the Old Testament, the idea of protective wings, the Lord having protective wings with which he uses to cover his people. We read a couple of those verses earlier in the worship service. And so by using this image, Boaz is calling attention to the fact that Ruth has entrusted herself to God's care. In taking up residence in Israel, what she has done is she has forsaken her Moabite gods. Remember, she even expressed that to Naomi. She said, "Your God will be my God." She has forsaken her Moabite gods. She has committed herself to the exclusive worship and service of the Lord. Though she is as vulnerable and defenseless as a young bird, she looks for safety under the wings of the Lord. And Boaz takes notice of that. And that tells us something about his piety as well. He is a man of God. Well, as Boaz commends Ruth for the kindness that he has shown to her mother-in-law, he offers up a prayer for Ruth, a prayer that the Lord would bestow rich blessings upon her. And I think that that's a little bit funny because, you know, Boaz isn't aware of it yet, but the Lord is actually going to make him the answer to that prayer. He's going to make him the answer to his own prayer. And in fact, we begin to see it happening right here in this chapter. Not only does Boaz provide food for Ruth and Naomi, but he goes far beyond what was required of him under the law. He even tells his reapers, you know, pull out some of the sheaves and throw them on the ground. You know, I mean, it's, you know, he's going way beyond what's required. And then in the coming chapters, we're going to see that the Lord is going to work through Boaz to give Ruth something that at this point was beyond her wildest dreams. Something that Ruth had essentially given up on when she decided to leave Moab. I'm sorry to, you know, spoil things for you if you don't know the story, but, you know, I'm going to tell you, Boaz is going to be Ruth's husband. Yes. Well, because of Boaz's great kindness, Ruth is able to go back to Naomi with an ephah of barley. An ephah of barley. Do you have an ephah measure in your cupboards? Probably not. This is a big unit of measure. This would have been somewhere between 30 and 50 pounds of grain. That's an beaten out already, you know, so the husks have been removed. 30 to 50 pounds of grain. It's an extraordinary amount. It's the equivalent of at least a half a month's wages for an ordinary worker. And that helps us to understand why Naomi is so surprised. This is not at all what she expected. And on top of that, You know, Naomi's probably quite hungry at this point. And Ruth even has food that she can immediately eat. Grain that has already been roasted. She brings her the leftovers from her lunch. And so what we're seeing here is that this woman who has just complained of being empty, well, she's beginning to get filled up. The Lord is filling her up. And it's at this point that we begin to see a change in Naomi. And I think it's also interesting, just by the way, to point out that Naomi doesn't deserve this, right? I think that's pretty clear in the text. She has not done anything to merit the kindness that God is showing to her. She's bitter at this point. She's mad. And yet the Lord pours out his blessings upon her. So we do begin to see a change in Naomi at this point. It's as if the clouds are finally beginning to break for her so that she can see the rays of light coming through. She sees Boaz's kindness to Ruth as a sign of the Lord's kindness to her. And this is evident in the blessing that she pronounces upon Boaz in verse 20, saying, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Well, those words stand in sharp contrast to the things that we've heard Naomi say in the earlier sections of the book. Naomi finally is beginning to realize that the Lord is not out to get her. Well, as we reflect upon Naomi's experience in these first couple of chapters of Ruth, I think it's a good example of what the Apostle Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 10, when he assures us this. He says, "God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability." The Lord did not allow Naomi to be tempted beyond what she could bear. Think about how things might have gone, you know, alternate scenarios. What if Ruth had been mistreated out in the fields? What if she had returned abused and discouraged and empty-handed? Perhaps that would have been too much for Naomi to handle. Maybe she would have snapped. We don't know for sure. But what we do know is that Boaz's extraordinary kindness to Ruth was the first bit of good news that Naomi had heard in a long time. At least it's the first bit of news that she was willing to recognize as good. There was good news, actually. She just didn't see it. It was good news that the famine had ended in Bethlehem. The door was open for her to come back. It was certainly good news that Ruth was so devoted to her and accompanied her back to Bethlehem. But neither of those things was able to break through Naomi's gloom. Only when Ruth returns to her with this abundance of grain is Naomi able to recognize the kindness that the Lord is extending to her. And when Naomi learns that it was Boaz who extended such extravagant kindness to Ruth, she has even more reason to be encouraged. She tells Ruth that Boaz is a close relative, and she refers to him as one of our redeemers. One of our redeemers. And this is a reference to the Old Testament concept of what is sometimes referred to as the kinsman redeemer. The kinsman redeemer. And the basic idea of the kinsman redeemer is explained in Leviticus 25:25. Listen to what that verse says. "If your brother becomes poor and sells part of his property, then his nearest redeemer shall come and redeem what his brother has sold." The law was very careful about the land and the ownership of the land, because the land was a symbol of the eternal inheritance that God promises his people in the covenant of grace. And so God wanted to make sure that nobody permanently lost their land in Israel. And so that you had this idea of the kinsman redeemer. He's a relative who is obliged to buy back the land of kinfolk who had fallen into debt and had to sell their property to pay off the debt. And there are other applications of the principle. And one application was, if there was a situation where a relative died and left his widow childless, the kinsman redeemer would marry the widow and produce an heir for the deceased relative. Now, it doesn't seem, from what we read later in Ruth, it doesn't seem that this is a situation where Boaz is so close of a kinsman that he is actually obligated to marry Ruth. We don't get that sense. There's actually somebody who's close, a closer relation. But what's interesting here is that Naomi has begun to think that this is a real possibility. She's all of a sudden become an optimist. How in the world did that happen? Now that her hopes have been raised, she holds out hope for even more. It really is a remarkable transformation brought about by God's kindness and God's grace. Well, Naomi and Ruth were in a very vulnerable position when they arrived in Bethlehem as two childless widows. And Ruth responded to her plight by looking for refuge under God's wings. And that is the Lord's purpose when he exposes his children to bruising. He shows us how weak and how vulnerable we are so that we'll rely on him rather than on ourselves. Here again is Richard Sibbes. He says, the consciousness of the church's weakness makes her willing to lean on her beloved and to hide herself under his wing. We all take refuge in something. We all look for safety. We all look for solace amid the storms and discouragements of life. Make sure that you always take refuge under the shadow of Christ's wings, because he is the Redeemer of God's elect. And whoever believes in him, whoever takes refuge under his wings, will never be put to